So if there's anyone outside who's waiting for a signal that we're about to start that, you may wish to tell them. This application, or this request for an appeal hearing, was filed by the applicant, Reynolds Pond LLC. The LLC is represented by counsel tonight, Mr. William Manning and Mr. Richard Forston. They will make the presentation on behalf of the applicant. Although county council is a legislative body, in the context of this hearing, it's sitting in a quasi-judicial capacity. Council will hear argument as to how the appellants believe the Planning and Zoning Commission committed any form of error in rendering its decision, which was that the preliminary subdivision plan for a cluster subdivision be denied. This is not a new public hearing. We really don't, it's not going to be helpful to repeat testimony that the same presentations that were heard at the planning and zoning level. This is the opportunity for persuasive argument, if it exists, as to why the commission may have made an error. We'll begin by hearing from the applicant's attorneys. I might ask before we begin, are there persons on the other side of this who are here to argue that the denial that the commission made a correct decision and that that decision should stand? You are? Ms. Granke, anyone else?
Excuse me.
Well, then we do have, you'll be given an opportunity along with anyone else who's here to present your views after the initial arguments are heard by the, as presented by the appellants. Mr. Manning?
Waiting for the...
If you have any, if you can provide any estimates of time or anything like that, that might be helpful.
I never timed it, but I suspect that I have about 20 minutes of remarks to make. Let me ask at the outset, since Jim has raised it, I think it's appropriate in an appellate setting for the appellant to have a brief rebuttal. And so I would ask the council if I could have that opportunity. I hope that I won't use it. And the only reason I would use it is if we hear statements made in opposition that cover subjects that I don't cover. So I promise not to be repetitive. In fact, I will be happy to limit it to 5 or 10 minutes at the most. And as I say, hope that I don't use those. But I would ask for that opportunity at the outset. And I wanted to thank...
Mr. Griffin,
well, I think we should wait until we get to that level, and because he's indicated he may not ask for it, so we'll take that up at that time.
If I could just reserve some time, and then if I think I need it, I'll come ask. And I wanted to thank Jim for letting us all know where you all were in the agenda as the last matter came up, because I hate to say it, you all missed one of the most beautiful sunsets I've seen in a long time out on the steps. So I'm sorry that you were cooped up in here, but we all enjoyed it. I am Bill Manning. I'm with the firm of Klett Rooney, and I represent Reynolds Pond LLC, which has a contract to purchase an 831-acre farm from the Isaacs family. You will hear, in fact, from at least one member, I believe, one member of the Isaacs family tonight, and his counsel, Mr. Parkowski. Also, Jim Fuquay, who you all know, could not be here tonight, but I'm pleased to say that he's dealing very successfully with some health issues and sends his regards. We're here tonight to review a decision made by the Planning and Zoning Commission, which rejected a cluster option plan presented by Reynolds Pond LLC and known as Isaacs Glen. You all have my letter of April 3rd, which was the statement of appeal. And we're here tonight because we don't believe, and we being me and Reynolds Pond, the Isaacs family, don't believe the commission applied your code, the code that you created, to this plan and instead attempted to apply its policy judgments. Now, I'm not here tonight to criticize those policy judgments. They may have been good ones, they may have been bad ones, but what I know they weren't was legislation. This plan was denied because of things that find themselves nowhere in the codes that you have created. And I'll say one other thing at the outset. This appeal isn't about whether farmland preservation is a good idea or a bad idea. It is an entirely appropriate policy when legislated correctly, keeping in mind the property rights of the families who own the farms. And in that regard, I would add that we're all, I say we, those of us who are interested in land use in this state are interested and actually fascinated to watch as the ordinance that you all enacted a couple months ago gathers some experience. It's the first time in the history of the state that any county has merged these two thoughts, farmland preservation on the one hand, property rights of the farmer on the other, and attempted to gather the resources necessary to offer fair compensation to farm families while pursuing preservation policy. As I say, all those of us who are land use planners, land use attorneys, are fascinated by the experiment you've started and waiting to see how that works out. Those conversations are, of course, for another evening. And tonight we're here simply to see whether the Planning and Zoning Commission correctly applied the code that you enacted. Yeah. I would say please feel free to interrupt me at any time. I'm going to move as quickly as I can because I know many of the things that we're talking about are in a sense familiar to you. If I'm going too fast, slow me down. If you have questions, please ask them. I have placed on the easel the Isaacs Glen site plan. Let me describe very briefly the project. As you all know, it's located northwest of the town of Milton. It is a plan that proposes 630 units. It's a clustered residential subdivision on 836 acres of ground. And so it complies, if you do the math, with the density restriction of 2 to the acre.
You mean 1630, don't you?
What did I say?
630.
I miss this all.
1630
units.
Okay.
On 836 acres. Thank you very much. I'm not going to list in detail or make the same presentation that Jim Fuquay made before the commission. He went to some length to point out the amenities that this project will offer. In passing, let me just say that this project proposes swimming pools and athletic fields and courts, a community center, several parks throughout the community, 9 miles of trails and pathways, dog walks, places reserved for neighborhood gardens, 54 acres of lake and pond. That is part of 361 acres of active open space. If you take that 361 acres and add to it the area reserved for stormwater management, you get to 410 acres, or 49% of the site. In other words, 49% of that 836-acre site will be open. And 42% of it, 361 acres, will be reserved for active recreational use. We will talk a little bit about the preservation of forested area. You should know that there are 152 acres that are forested on this tract of land, and 122 of those acres would be preserved under this plan. That's 80% of the forested land. The plan featured substantial improvements to local roads running through that property. Hummingbird Road would be relocated and straightened out, widened and improved. As an aside, I will notice say now that the commission commented about the difficulty with cars and farm machinery on Hummingbird Road. Well, there would be a lot of difficulty now. I drove it the other day. You know about it. It's a 16-foot tar chip road with, in some cases, drainage ditches on both sides. That condition will be abated with wider roads and shoulders to permit the very condition that the commission complained about. Biederman Road will be improved. The intersection, let me see if I can get my laser gun working here. The intersection of Route 30 and Cedar Creek Road will be made safer. As you can see, those angles are not squared away. They are not 90-degree angles. And the movement coming, this movement coming north and then looking over to your shoulder to see oncoming traffic wanting to turn left is a fairly dangerous movement. And as it is right now, that is a much more generous condition than exists right now. You all have considered Isaac's Glen before, and Isaac's Glen. It was an application to you all for a zoning overlay. You entertained an application for an RPC, Residential Plan Community Rezoning. That proposal came before you last year. It called for a mixed use that included residences, an office component, a small shopping center, assisted living, and other features. You considered that. And in that deliberation, you concluded not to rezone the property, but invited the applicant to resubmit the application to the Planning Commission under the cluster option, an option that you all created in, I think, 2004. You were kind enough to, I'll say, jump us up in line. We were not sent back to square one. Instead, you provided for expedited review of the plan, of the cluster plan, by the commission. And indeed, we did file an application on October 17th, 2005, to the commission, reflecting the cluster option that you see shown there. I'm going to depart from a description of the project for a moment to talk about a procedural issue, and I'll touch on it briefly, and then you can discuss it with your counsel. I believe that state law requires the review of that plan, the plan that was filed on October 17, in 45 days. I'll read you the language. State statute provides that the commission shall approve or disapprove a plat within 45 days after the submission thereof. Otherwise, such plat shall be deemed to have been approved, and a certificate to that effect shall be issued by the commission upon demand. The application was filed on the 17th of October. 45 days passed. We demanded the certificate. It was not issued. And that's all I'll say about that issue. I believe that we had a right at that point, after the 45-day period expired, to have the plan approved automatically. You will receive... It's an exceedingly legal issue. You will talk to your counsel about that. We believe it entitled us then, without any further deliberation, to plan approval.
How many days did they take to respond?
Well, the no decision was made until March 1st.
How many days?
About 120.
120 days. Okay, thank you.
And to fill out the chronology for you, a hearing was held on January 12th. The decision was made on March 1st at a business meeting of the commission, in which the commission voted 4-1 to reject the preliminary plan. You have the commission's March 6th letter explaining the reasons for its decision. We will go through each one of those reasons, and I'll do it as quickly as I can, and explain why none of those reasons provide a lawful basis to turn this plan down. That in each case, the commission did one of two things. It either applied criteria to this plan that you cannot find in the code that you all wrote, or made judgments that it had no record to make. In all cases, the reasons offered by the commission are not legally sustainable, and that's why we're here tonight. You all have created... as Jim says, you slipped out of your normal legislative capacity and tonight sit in a quasi-judicial role to hear our appeal and decide simply whether the commission made error. The fact is that the Residential development of that 836 acres is permitted under the zoning and subdivision codes that you all have authored and helped refine over the years. Your cluster ordinance asked the Planning and Zoning Commission to make a judgment whether the cluster plan was better than a non-cluster plan in the AR1 zoning classification. I hope to demonstrate tonight that you can't conclude to the contrary. You cannot conclude that this plan is not superior to a hypothetical plan that did not have the cluster features. And certainly, the commission could not make that judgment based on other cluster plans that the commission has approved. Land use is a very controversial issue, and our courts have spent a lot of time instructing us all on the guiding principles. And if there's one principle that is most important to this application tonight, it's basically as follows. When reviewing a subdivision plan, a planning commission must review the plan based on the specific requirements of the zoning and subdivision codes. If the plan conforms with those legal requirements, the plan must be approved. The commission is not free to reject a plan on the basis that it conflicts with some general purpose language appearing in the code. The example that comes to mind is not in keeping with the character of the neighborhood. You've seen words like that used in zoning and subdivision plans. Those kind of general, standardless provisions in zoning and subdivision codes aren't enough. They're not an appropriate criteria. Instead, and you all have done this, you all have created specific criteria by which cluster option plans must be judged.
May I ask, what you just read, was that your editorialization or was that from a court ruling?
It was from a court ruling, and I'll expand on that in a minute, and we'd be happy to furnish citations. I am summarizing what Delaware courts have said about those engaged in the land use process, thinking that you would prefer that I don't read at length from cases and give you citations that will take a lot of time. You are free to consult with your own counsel if you have any questions about the principles that I'm talking about, but I think these are principles that are non-debatable. And there's a very good reason why those two principles that I've talked about are non-debatable. If it were otherwise, if it was the case that you simply create a commission and say, commission, decide whether you like plans or don't like plans, that'll be the process. And there's no point in creating a subdivision code with very specific requirements. There's no point in creating a zoning code with very specific requirements. And instead, we should all just abandon the rule of law and let projects be voted up or down based on whether commission members like them or don't like them. That is a very dangerous thing, and Delaware courts make it quite clear that that is an inappropriate basis to decide subdivision plans. In fact, what they say, well, let me put it this way. They say exactly what you would expect them to say. They say that when you are restricting a landowner's right to do something with his property, to subject it to a particular use, you have to do so explicitly with very clear limitations so that that landowner at any time can walk into your law library and read a book and find out what he can do and what he can't do with his land. The Delaware courts require that, but that's exactly what you would hope and expect. That's why you all exist, to refine zoning and subdivision codes. The importance of being able to read a page and understand what you can do with your property is paramount. And Delaware cases say that if it's ambiguous, then you can't enforce it. So there's a premium given and an importance placed on legislating clear and explicit standards for subdivision applications. You have done that, and this plan meets them. The reasons for which this plan was rejected have nothing to do with the things you wrote in the Sussex County subdivision or zoning code. this phenomena. As I said, land use is a controversial thing. I've been practicing land use law for some time. I've been on a school board, and I can tell you the things that set a community at edge faster than anything else are public education and zoning. And we don't have time to go into an analysis of what attracted me to both of them. But because land use is such a controversial subject, courts have spent a lot of time talking about this phenomena that we see here tonight, which is the rejection of a plan simply because it's not popular. I will quote to you one case called the East Lake Partners case, where the City of Dover Planning Commission tried to reject a plan based on general concerns about adverse impacts caused by the plan. You'll hear that a lot. If I want to turn down a plan and can't tell you how it fails to comply with the code, I might say, well, I think it'll have an adverse impact. Kind of vague, unarticulated, nonspecific concerns. Here's what the court said about that. The Planning Commission may not reject a site plan for a permitted use on the grounds that the project will adversely affect the general neighborhood. When people purchase land zoned for a specific use, they are entitled to rely on the fact that they can implement that use provided that the project complies with all the specific criteria found in the ordinances. Basically what I just said. You may have heard recently of a case involving Lake Comegys where similar thoughts occurred to our Court of Chancery. And the court gave instructions to those of us and those of you who sit on legislative bodies. You're the ones who fashion the rules. And the court said if the compliance with the established limits is a problem, in other words, if compliance with what you've already done doesn't work for you from a policy point of view, the solution is to change the general limitations through appropriate legislation, altering zoning districts, altering the comprehensive plan, not for the commission to subject property owners to an ad hoc decision in a quasi-judicial proceeding imposing on them a standard indefinably short of the legislatively established limits of general applicability, and then reserving for itself, for the commission, the right to permit other, more popular applicants to proceed on less onerous terms. The court was sympathetic to the challenge that you all face. He said, I underscore again my understanding of the legitimate concerns that motivated the opposition to the project and the sincerity of the council in that case, council's reaction to them. The problem is that those concerns cannot, in our system of government, be addressed solely through imposition of ad hoc burdens on the individual property owner. Gentlemen, I think that's exactly what was done in the case of this Isaac's plan. Let me quickly, if I can, go through what the Planning Commission said on March 6th and why the reasons offered in that March 6th letter are not a lawful basis on which to reject the plan. I'm going to quote from the Planning Commission. The proposed project, the first item, it said, proposed project does not meet the purpose of the zoning ordinance since it does not promote the orderly growth of the county. Now, so far, I haven't seen anything that is precise or specific. I can't tell you about whether something meets the purpose of the zoning ordinance simply by saying it's got to meet the purpose of the zoning ordinance. I don't know exactly what orderly growth is or disorderly growth. The commission went on, because the project is not in a development district established by the 2002 Sussex County Land Use Plan update. Well, what the project is in a zoning district that permits this plan. And where it's permitted in the zoning code and where the plan complies with the subdivision code, it has to be approved. I've done a little bit of digging around to try and figure out where these development districts are and what the criterion are. I had some difficulty doing it, but I can tell you that where the zoning code permits this and where I comply with the subdivision code in creating the plan, I'm entitled to go forward. And in fact, as I'll discuss in a few moments, other cluster plans with proposing residential projects in development districts have been approved. So it's not the case, as suggested by the commission's reason, that you can't develop, that if you're outside a development district, you can't develop. The commission had already approved several cluster plans that were not in quote-unquote development districts. Second reason offered by the commission, the proposed project is not in accordance with its 2002 Sussex County Land Use Plan update as follows. A, it does not represent growth in an area where public infrastructure and services are available. There is a policy judgment there that one ought not to develop where public infrastructure and services are unavailable. But that's not what your code says. Your code does not have that limitation in it. And I would argue from a policy point of view that nothing gets developed if you require that before a shovel is put in the ground, all the infrastructure that it will eventually require be there before the development occurs. And so this is not a basis on which this plan could have been rejected. Once again, and this will be a constant refrain, and I hope I'm not too repetitive or boring about it, but the place for restrictions that have teeth and really shape what you can do with your property is in the legislation that you enact in the zoning code or in the subdivision code. B, the location of the proposed development is in an area where farmland preservation exists through agricultural preservation districts, and one of the goals of the plan update is to reduce pressure for development in agricultural areas and to promote the preservation of farmland. Preservation of farmland is a good idea. I've already said that. I think there's probably no dispute about that in this room tonight. The problem is that your code permits this development on what is currently farmland. And so while there is more currently than the date of the code enactment concern in this state about farmland preservation, that concern has not found its way into your code and therefore can't be the basis upon which a plan that complies with your code can be rejected. We'll talk a little bit more about this. I'll reserve that until there's another point where the commission talks about this same subject. The next point made by the commission is the low-density area also seeks to prevent untimely scattering of such uses as what is proposed. Instead, the plan redirects these types of uses to areas planned for efficient extension of public services. Public services are not planned to be extended in this area. Now, your zoning code does say in the AR zoning, there's some words that are familiar with or very similar to what the Planning Commission used here, but different in a very material way. Your zoning code, the language that you all created, says the AR regulation seeks to prevent untimely scattering of more dense urban uses, which should be confined to areas planned for efficient extension of public services. Notice how that got changed by the Planning Commission. They dropped the reference to urban uses, which is the language that you all used in your code, and say, the low-density area seeks to prevent untimely scattering of uses such as what is proposed. Well, that's not what your code says. In fact, what your code says is what the AR area is designed to prevent scattering of more dense urban uses. This is 836 acres on which there are 1,630 units. 49% of that 836 acres is open space. You cannot call this an urban use. And so in this case, the standard is actually bent a little bit to suit the ad hoc thoughts of the Planning Commission when it considered this application. Next item. The Planning Commission said that the PLUS process does not transfer zoning authority from the county to the state, and the county makes the final decision on this application, but the Commission must still consider the comments from the PLUS process, which are part of the record. These comments include the following. So this begins the Commission's application of comments that fall out of a gathering of state officials, not in Sussex County, having no legislative authority to say anything about what uses are appropriate in Sussex County. And yet the commission applies these utterances that come out of that meeting as if they were law, as if you had already transmitted those things, those words, into your zoning code. It's the same thing that we've talked about before tonight. You can't apply criteria that haven't been legislatively enacted. The first of the plus comments was, the proposed project is located in an investment level 4 area according to the strategies for state policies and spending. Because the project is outside of an area where the state and local governments have planned for growth, the state opposes this proposal. The state does oppose this proposal. There's no question about that. You know that. I know that. The governor's office and her officials spent a great deal of time lobbying against this project for the reasons stated by the commission. But that doesn't change Sussex County law. And we can talk about whether the governor's policies are appropriate or not. I always have reservations about someone who requires that all of the infrastructure necessary for growth be there before the growth occurs. It's never been the way our communities have grown. We've let the market decide where projects are going to go. And then we as taxpayers, whether we live in that project or not, have come up with the resources necessary to provide an extension of infrastructure. This governor's policy is to change all that. It may be the right thing to do. It may be the wrong thing to do. But it isn't Sussex County law. And it has no standing when you're reviewing a subdivision plan in this county. And so I don't want to be flippant about this and to say it doesn't matter to the applicant what the state thinks about this project or where the state's investment and spending strategies are. But a critical thing hasn't happened here. Those thoughts, those planning policies haven't been transferred to your zoning and subdivision code. And the plus process is not binding. It's ironic that this item begins with a recitation of that. The plus process does not transfer zoning authority from the county to the state. Well, if that's true, then why is it that the criterion that fell out of these plus planning conversations are the very criteria that end up being used to reject this plan, as if they had become law? The commission also refers to the state saying, the state estimated that the project would bring several thousand new residents to the area, and the state has no plans to invest in infrastructure upgrades or additional services such as schools, police, transportation for the area. Same point I just made. I would add that it was ever thus. In other words, infrastructure always follows development, and a planning process which says the other has to come first is, in my mind, a cynical policy. What it really means is there shall be no development. The next comment, State Department of Agriculture opposes the project because it is contrary to livable Delaware and would act as a catalyst for other residential and commercial development in the area. Well, what's going on here is the state is saying to you all, gee, we wish you would change your zoning code. And you may choose to do that. But the Isaacs are entitled to rely, and Reynolds Pond LLC were entitled to rely on the zoning code as it was when they created this plan and filed it on October 17. And so while subsequent changes may come to your zoning code, I'm sure they will. This plan, those changes can't apply to this plan. Commission says DENRAC has stated that the proposed development will have negative impacts on streams and water bodies adjoining the project or downstream from it. Keep in mind what I said earlier. This project is actually going to create water bodies. But let me say in a more pointed way, DENREC is an administrative agency, and it has regulations. It has the power to regulate anything in the environmental sphere. DENREC has regulated these subjects that has imposed regulations to prevent the, quote, negative impacts on streams and water bodies. The short answer here is this project will comply with every one of those DENREC regulations. And a general objection on this ground is simply unenforceable. All development has impact. And the objective here is for those regulatory bodies that have jurisdiction to impose regulations that reasonably control that impact. And DENREC has absolutely done that, and this project will absolutely comply. And so that is not a basis to turn this project down. The Office of State, this is the Commission's words, the Office of State Planning Coordination is opposed to the project and is generally concerned that the project is out of character with the surrounding area. Remember I said a minute ago that this is the kind of general prefatory language that you see frequently in zoning codes and subdivision codes, and which is not the basis on which a plan can be turned down, and instead you have to find specific criteria, particularly in the subdivision sense. There have to be specific criteria with which the plan does not comply. Planning Commission says the project is in an area that is not developed with similar projects or residential density. There are no other developments that are similar in size or character to what has been proposed. Two thoughts. One, the size and the character of this project is absolutely permitted by your written codes. And two, I guess I'm almost tempted to go back to the beginning of time and point out that it will always be the case that a project is in an area that has not developed with similar projects if it's the first project. And if you never have the first project, then you'll never be able to say that there are other similar projects in the area. And so the project complies with the code, and this out of character with the surrounding properties is not a basis on which this project could be rejected. The commission next said the proposed project surrounds Route 30, Hummingbird Road, and Biederman Road. Route 30 is a truck route, and all three roads are used regularly by large farm equipment. The project, with 1,630 residential lots, and its proposal to alter Hummingbird and Biederman Roads is inconsistent with the existing traffic and agricultural use of these roads. The project would also lead to increased congestion on the adjacent and surrounding roads. DLDOT approved a traffic impact study for the RPC proposal that you all reviewed. And some of the improvements that you see here, you see Hummingbird Road not in its current location, but in a location that was agreed upon by DLDOT. As I say, Hummingbird Road, there currently is difficulty when a large piece of farm equipment and an automobile confront each other. This plan will abate those difficulties by providing room for each. This is not a basis on which to turn this project down because, as I say, DLDOT had approved this project by approving the traffic impact study that accompanied the RPC plan. This plan does not have some of the features that generated traffic in the RPC plan. It doesn't have the office use. It doesn't have the retail use. It doesn't have the assisted living. I believe there was some multifamily in the RPC. My point is, if DLDOT liked that like the RPC plan, then there's no way DLDOT will object to this. The commission says it would be premature to approve this subdivision at this time. This is a particularly interesting objection because it's very unfair. It would be premature to approve the subdivision at this time since a significant part of it requires a relocation of Hummingbird and Biederman Roads. That relocation was the result of conversations with DLDOT about how to make the conditions better. Since DLDOT has not approved the alteration of these roads, approval of preliminary site plan is not appropriate. DLDOT never approves the relocation of roads at the preliminary site plan stage of a project. So to say that DLDOT hasn't approved these proposals is to put us in a catch-22 that the applicant can never get out of. It is an unfair basis upon which to reject a plan. It is also inconsistent with other plans approved by Sussex County in the past. I am advised that Bayside Americana, where roads are being realigned as part of this development, those road realignment were officially approved by DLDOT after the plan was approved. And that's the way it has to be. DLDOT will not give up its current right-of-way until you've already built the road and built it to state specs if you're going to move one to the other. Now, you can't build that road until your plan's approved. So DLDOT never approves this kind of relocation and accepts new rights of way until the developer has actually built the road. Commission says the commission is not satisfied that the proposed cluster subdivision is superior to a standard subdivision. Instead, it appears that the main goal of the developer is the maximization of the number of residential home lots. The developer is asking for the approval of 1,630 homes, which is significantly more than the net density that would be achieved with a standard subdivision. I will ask you all and ask your counsel to search the record before the commission and tell me where the commission had in front of it the density that would be achieved with a standard subdivision. It's nowhere in the record. Don't bother looking. You can't find it. And so my question is, how did the commission know this? The commission here was, however, treading on ground that you asked it to tread on. One of the only judgments that the commission is supposed to make in reviewing a cluster plan is it better than a non-cluster plan? When you created the cluster option, you created a good thing. While you left density, at least at the time that this plan was proposed, at 2 to the acre, you asked for more open space. You required 30% as opposed to 10%. You said that you can't build, your lots cannot include wetlands, which is not true in a straight AR non-cluster. Buffers are required under your cluster option that are not required. It is very difficult to conclude that this plan is worse than a non-cluster plan if the non-cluster plan could have ignored buffers, and there are substantial buffers in this plan, could have ignored the preservation of open space. You've got 49% of this 836-acre piece of ground left open. How can that not be better than the non-cluster plan, which would have permitted the developer to just put a grid, 2-to-the-acre grid over the whole thing, not cluster the homes, spread them all over the 836 acres? I submit that it is inconceivable and cannot be supported that one can look at this plan, compare it to a hypothetical non-cluster plan, which is what the exercise is supposed to be, and say, this is not better. The commission says that it does not feel that the items set forth in subsection 99.9c of your subdivision ordinance have been favorably addressed. 99-9C is your subdivision code, and it sets forth general criteria which the Planning Commission is supposed to apply in the review of a plan. So finally, we're getting to the rules that you all created and the criteria that you all created. But none of these criteria are identified as a reason to reject the plan, nor did the Planning Commission identify how these criteria are not met or how they could be met. And I will say that Section 99C offers very little guidance as to how some of the criteria can be met. For example, the criteria include preservation of natural and historical features and preservation of open space and scenic views. I understand the importance of those things, but if you tell me that it is inconsistent that I violated that criterion by building on the property at all, then I would suggest that that criteria cannot be applied. In other words, you've zoned this area for growth. You've zoned it for 2-to-the-acre residential use. You've invited the applicant to make sense out of that 2-to-the-acre use by giving him a cluster option, and you've seen the results. Parks, lakes, half of its open space, realigned roads to satisfy DLDOT's concerns. That's what you all had in mind, to say that the project doesn't tend towards the preservation of natural and historic features or the preservation of open space simply defies the fact that the applicant has complied, has done everything you wanted him to do in creating the cluster option. Now, let me turn to the few points raised by the commission in its letter. The commission says the subdivision is not integrated into the existing terrain and surrounding landscape and will adversely affect natural areas while causing significant, listen to this, while causing significant tree, vegetation, and soil removal. If the subdivision was approved, it would require extensive grading for new roads, relocation of existing roads, grading for the proposed large stormwater management areas with even more impervious areas caused by homes, streets, amenities, and driveways. Yes, development creates impervious surfaces. They've been minimized here, but that happens. And when you zone a piece of ground AR1 and give the developer the cluster option, that's going to happen to some extent. I can't tell you the standard here integrated into the existing terrain and surrounding landscape. I'm not sure that I know what that means. Here's what I do know. Land is essentially flat. You all know the piece of ground. The woodlands have been left standing, 80% of them. How you can conclude that a project which preserves 80% of the woodlands on the project, that it will adversely affect natural areas while causing significant tree, vegetation, and soil removal, if that's the case, then you can't build anything under this code. If a project that preserves 80% of the woodlands doesn't measure up, then I don't know what does. The commission says the preservation of open space and scenic views would be adversely affected by 1,630 lots. What is now wide open space, and here we're coming to it, what is now wide open space will become congested with homes and other buildings, streets, and other structures typically part of a residential subdivision. In other words, we don't want you to build what the code lets you build. It's because it's no longer going to be open space. Forget the fact that you can build 630 units on this, according to the code. We just don't want it. And so we're going to reject your plan. Commission goes on, the project will adversely affect area roadways, does not provide for the safe vehicular and pedestrian movement within the site and along adjacent roads. Remember what I said, 9 miles of trails within the project? If that doesn't meet the commission's the requirement, then I don't know what does. There will be many cars per day added to the roadways. That is true. And a TIS was done under the RPC plan and passed muster with DLDOT. The project, this is my favorite because I think it is a particularly unfair criterion. The commission says the project does not preserve and conserve farmland. Instead, it eliminates a large area of farmland in an area where the state has spent a great deal of money to preserve farmland. Listen to what the commission is saying. If this farmer voluntarily enters into the state farmland preservation program, which is the case here, the project of land essentially to the north and east, some of it is in that program. So the farm family here says, state, we voluntarily agree to enter into this program. We're going to sell to you our development rights, and that's fine for us. Now the state comes along and says, well, since we made this investment, we're going to tell this family, to whom we have not given a nickel, that they can't develop either. And I have to tell you, when I've had conversations with, Secretary Skews, I'll use him as an example, and I pointed this out, it was like two ships passing in the night. I don't understand the fairness of saying to this family, well, you haven't agreed to be in the preservation program, and we haven't paid you anything, but because we paid him money, we're going to tell you you can't develop anything. We're going to reject your plan. That's exactly what happened in this case. Finally, the commission says the project is not compatible with other land uses which are primarily agricultural, as stated above. Missing the point, the land is zoned AR1 and residential use is a permitted use in this area. There was even testimony to the effect that the project would adversely affect industries that are incidental to agricultural uses such as crop dusting. The property subdivision will also hinder farmers' ability to transport large pieces of agricultural equipment along state roads that the developer plans to integrate into the residential subdivision. The fact that the developer is widening roads and leaving particularly wide shoulders for these very farmland pieces of farmland, farm machinery to pass cars was ignored by the commission. And this is one of those general statements. Remember I said a minute ago, you can't use these things to turn a project down. Not compatible with other land uses. The judgment has already been made by this council that this land is AR1. And it is permitted under your law that it be developed for residential uses. I will wind up as quickly as I can. That completes my review of the reasons offered by the commission to reject this plan. That's all of them. I've told you about every one. And not one of them is enforceable. You all, I believe, and this is just my personal opinion, did the right thing when you created the cluster option in August of 2004. As I said a minute ago, you required buffers where there were previously none were previously required. You increased the preservation of open space to 30%. This project goes way beyond that. It was a good thing to do. Since March, this plan was rejected on March 1. Through March of this year, 26 applicants have come to the commission with cluster plans. 29. 26 of them have been approved. Three, and I'm double counting here because the Isaacs property, Isaacs Glen and Hayfield are essentially the same piece of ground, Hayfield being just to the west. That was rejected as well by the commission. But if you put them together, there was only 2 out of 29 cluster option plans rejected. The other one, by the way, has some environmental issues associated with it. The point is that if the commission is going to apply some of these particularly vague standards and if the commission is going to make a judgment about whether this cluster plan is better than a hypothetical non-cluster plan, it has to do it in a consistent way. You can't look at those other 26 projects and conclude that they were better than this one. Only five of the 26 preserve more open space than this project. If you ranked all 29, this project preserves a higher percentage of open space than all but five. Nor is this project the most dense. This project comes within your density limits because it has to comply with the code. But the commission has approved 8 projects that had higher gross density than this project. Of the 26 plans that have been approved, 24 were not in a development district. And so the commission has been quite willing, in respect of other plans, to approve projects where they are zoned, regardless of whether they're in a low density area or a development district or anything else. If you want to see the numbers on that map of Sussex County, show you where cluster plans have been approved. It's probably too small for you to see, so I'll summarize it. They've been approved to the north, east, west, and south of Isaacs Glen. Some of them have more density. Almost all of them preserve less open space, and yet 26 have been approved out of the 29 applications. When you know that fact, you realize that what was happening here was not the application of your code. Instead, what was happening here was the commission reacting to a lot of angst expressed by the state administration about this project. The state administration decided that Isaacs Glen was not going to happen. Secretary of Agriculture, Director of Planning, lobby against it, and offer up planning policy suggestions that the commission mistook for law and applied it against this plan in a way that is entirely inconsistent with almost every other cluster option that came before the commission. I'm pretty close to done. I will just sum up by saying the commission didn't do what you asked it to do. The commission didn't apply the code that you have taken the time to revise over time so that it reflects your planning policies. The commission's action should be rejected. You have the appellate authority to conclude that the commission was wrong and this plan should be approved. It meets all the requirements of your existing laws, and we ask that that's exactly what you do, that you tell the commission that its decision is reversed and instead that the plan is approved. Do you have any questions for me at this time? Okay, thanks very much. With the reservation of brief rebuttal, if it's necessary, that ends our presentation. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you very much.
Do I correctly understand that that concludes your presentation?
Other than the bottle of average, okay.
Is there anyone else here who wishes to speak in favor of this? And please understand that we're not holding a new public hearing. If you have comments to make, confine them to reasons why you think the commission made an error, and please, to the extent that you can, try to state it very succinctly. And if you're representing a group, tell us who you're representing, because we would like to hear from a spokesperson as opposed to everyone who's with you, especially if you're stating all their views.
Good evening. My name is David Isaacs. I am, I guess, representing the Isaacs family. I'd like to speak for my mother and my family. A little bit on what's going on with this for the last 4 years or so going on now. Let's see. Basically, we've been in the farming business our entire life. Most of you, you know who I am, where I've been, what I've done. I farmed the land, worked the land my entire life. Now I'm involved in poultry. I have a large poultry operation. I work with my son, Rob. We have 15 poultry houses. We've been growing for Purdue Farms since 1966. We've been involved in poultry. We did the farming with the grain and the soybeans and peas, everything. My father, before me, also tilled this land. He had to acquire some of this land. This wasn't given to him. He had to. It was part of the John S. Isaacs and Sons, which was a large farming family back in the 50s and 60s. They had a cannery. It was a large operation. My grandfather was killed in a car accident when I was 2 years old, and when that company split up, he got his father's part of it, and he had to buy other parcels on this property from his brother, his sisters, to acquire what he has today. As a farmer, you had to buy the equipment, you had to make it every year, and finally, maybe you can pay off the loans at the end, and at the end, when it's all done, what you have left is the land. The land is our family's whole future, really. And it seems like the Mr. Manning stated, that there's kind of been a target put on my family, through the administration and through the Secretary of Agriculture and everything. We've seems to have been unfairly targeted, I think, because of all of the projects that have been approved right around our property. Let's see. I want to go back, just talk slightly on this. The RPC hearing that was a year or so ago, the family would like to thank Mr. Phillips, because he did everything he could that day to try and get that program through. He tried hard to get that through that day, and Mr. Dukes supported that project also. He didn't know, I think, at first how he was going to decide on that, but he thought that that was probably the best use, that plan was the best use for that property. Mr. Rogers and Mr. Jones, they were kind of opposed to the project, I guess. The family hopes that you'll give us a fair shot here, that you'll listen to what Mr. Manning said, and that with all that's going on around it, that you'll that you'll give us a fair chance to do what's right. The first thing, or the main thing that is said about this project is it's out of character for the area. Now, that might have been in 2002 when my father first sold his property, put it on. But now, I'd like to just go around the property. I mean, it's there on the map. You can't really see it that well. But if you go on 30 and go right next to our property and you start toward Melfort, right next to it is Wind Dancer, approved development, sitting right there. It's already got the roads in, 4 or 5 lots already sold. Now you're at Jefferson's Crossroads. If you make a right, you go out toward Route 1, you have Sylvan Acres, an older development. You have Presswick out there on the highway. All this is within a mile as the crow flies. If you go down 38 from Jefferson's Crossroads, you got the villages of Jefferson's Crossroads. You got King's Crossing. There's sandstone that's been approved out there for cluster development. And if you go to on my mother's road in front of Cecil Carpenter's property and go a mile, you've got Hummingbird Meadows approved, 205 units on 162 acres. Right next to it is like the one that I couldn't believe was Captain's Way. Captain's Way, 494 units on 258 acres, cluster development. 2 weeks after Isaac's Glen was turned down, I sat there in the second row and Mr. Burton read how a cluster is the future. It's way, you know, it's the greatest thing for this development, for the land use. You open space, running trails, the whole thing. But what's different between it and our development? What was there's no difference. This one, as far as the preservation, it backed right up to the Ponders track. This Captain's Way is right against the forest preservation. I mean, it backs right up to it. And the road issue with saying 30 can't handle or it's too much traffic, when you got 16 going right by Captain's Way, and you got all the beach traffic coming here from Baltimore and Washington in the summertime on 16, there was nothing mentioned about that then. I mean, we're just at a loss. I got a few more things here, but I don't need to run through a mess of this. It's been a long night. We've just been here too long. I want to say a few things about my father. I mean, he decided to sell this property. He had cancer. He knew he wasn't in real good health. And after farming for all these years, in the beginning, he didn't, the land preservation, he was for land preservation, but he didn't think that was what he wanted to do for his family. He thought that for his family, he didn't want to tie the land up. He thought that keeping the land and his rights to sell it for his kids and the grandkids and the little kids would be better for their future. Other families, there's other farm preservation close to us. It was Isaac's land. Most of it is Hobby Isaac's, who has been out in opposition of this project from the beginning. But his family, Hobby sits down with Trey and Tommy and his family, and they decide we hunt and we fish, or we want our property to be in the land preservation program. So they put theirs in. But if Dad, you know, doesn't he have the right to say, well, I don't want to go into that plan. I want to be able to sell my property. I want to take care of my family in that way. That just makes sense to me. Let's see. The main reason for selling the farm is it's really not a whole lot of people's business, but my father became very ill. He was having trouble breathing. We took him. He had to go to the hospital in BB, and they were doing the final test to see if there was anything they could do, and there wasn't. You know, it was taking its time. It was getting close. My mom and I are in the room, and the doctor comes in, and she goes out in the hall, and he called me, pulled me up, said, "Come over." I went over and sat by the bed. And he said, you know, take care of your mother. I've done all the best I can for her. I think, you know, she's going to be taken care of. And I hope you're not upset with what we did with the farm. I think that selling the farm in one unit is what we wanted to do. Before it was set up to be divided between myself and my two sisters, it would have gone into thirds. And since I worked the farm or might not want to sell my part, and if my sister did or the other one did, then it might cause conflict. And he thought the best way to settle his estate was to be able to sell the farm as one block.
Mr. Isaacs, I apologize for interrupting you, but if there's anything you can tell us about why the commission made an error, that's what we need to hear. I know there are deeply held family feelings here, and we understand all that, but that's not putting us where we need to be in terms of hearing why the commission made an error.
Okay. My main thing with the commission is the out of character. When they say the land is out of character with the surrounding development that has come around it, is just wrong. I don't see that at all. I don't see that at all. If you can pass Captain's Way 2 weeks after Isaac's Glen was turned down, then that is just not right. And the farmland preservation is the other big issue. It's a voluntary program, and just because, like Mr. Manning said, if there is property here and they've gone into it and the state's trying to say this one can't, it's just that's just not right. So I'll better
thank you
sit
very
down.
Much.
Thank you.
Someone else had their hand up, the gentleman back there. And these are people who are speaking in support at this point. And we want to hear why you think the commission made an error. As interesting as they are, we don't need the history lessons.
Very good. Good evening, gentlemen, madam. My name is Tom Herholt. I reside in Milford, Delaware. And I can actually say I do work in Oak Orchard. Part of this project here has baffled me. Two phrases: character of the area and development district. This whole area is a development district. As Mr. Isaac said, he named off Windjammer, King's Crossing, Heritage Farms, Sylvan Acres, Waple Pond Acres, New Market Village, Prestwick, Captain's Run, Hummingbird Meadows. These are all subdivisions. Subdivisions created in this area. And I think only two of them have a decent infrastructure. By that, I mean fire protection and central sewer. We must think of what we are leaving to the next generation for our county. I hope we leave a better one. Ride down Jefferson Road. You will see every kind of septic system imaginable. And if you look closer, you will see ones that have failed. How much money has this county put out in rebuilding septic systems, gone into subdivisions with failed septic systems? If this area continues in small, cut-up subdivisions, this county and myself and everyone in this room will be spending more money rebuilding septic systems. I think this is the wrong way to leave our county to the next generation. I believe that the commission in disallowing this subdivision was in error for those reasons. Thank you.
Anyone else?
I'm not a lawyer.
Your name, sir?
My name is Richard Page, and I live at 11527 Bideman Road, right next to the development, proposed development. As I was going to say, I'm not a lawyer, but I do have some logic that seems to be bothering me. For example, the commission said that the roads would not support this development, but yet approval has been granted to about four or five developments on 404, and I'm sure that road, which is already heavily traveled, bumper to bumper on the weekends, and now almost bumper to bumper during the prime time during the day, and nobody thinks anything about that. There's no infrastructure to support these. There's no roads to support these developments. Also, when you say infrastructure, you're talking about schools. Well, what about the recent developments at Nassau? There's a huge development there. Then there's another Vincent Overlook, Cavenick, and Sweetbriar. They'll impact the schools tremendously because they're enormous developments. I think Vincent Overlook has to be almost as big as the Isaac's Farm. And they're moving dirt. They're making mountains over there. I don't know if any of you have driven by, but there are mountains of dirt. And that is just a matter of fact. When you develop, that's what happens. Well, anyway, you're approving developments in the area that don't afford the area anything to enjoy. Whereas with Isaac's, there are the trails, the ponds, the swimming holes. One development, which I really dislike, is Wind Dancer. They've paved the main road in Wind Dancer. There's only one road in Wind Dancer. That road, I dare somebody to drive in while somebody's driving out. That road is not wide enough for two cars to pass. For a fire engine to get in there, it's going to be very difficult to get around the circle that's in the middle there if the fire is in the back of the development.
And how would this suggest to us that council or the commission made an error? Are you saying that when they approve Wind
Dancer? Well, they applied rules and regulations to Isaac's Farm project that they don't seem to be applying to other projects, which is exactly what the lawyer for the development has stated, and I completely agree. But even somebody who doesn't know the law and doesn't know all the regulations can look and see that there doesn't seem to be any logical reason to deny this project other than the fact that this is an area that somebody said that we don't want it developed, but we're not willing to pay the landowner what he can get on the market for it. Now, who would like to be in that position? Somebody to come along and say, you can't sell your house for any more than $20,000 because we want your house. We don't want somebody else living there. Yeah, that's what you're doing to the Isaacs.
Could you sort of wrap up, sir?
Yes, I am.
We've got a lot of other people here to be heard.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Someone back there, the gentleman in the blue shirt, I'd like to ask you to tell us why you think the commission made an error, and please try to be brief.
I'll be very brief. Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Ernest Zinzer. I'm from Rehoboth Beach. Trying to add to Mr. Manning's presentation is like trying to add to the Bible. It just doesn't work. But I followed this proposal from the very beginning, from its original configuration, which in my opinion, should have been a model for county development, to its present configuration. All of the previous proposals, each of them were not denied, as you know. I don't think Isaac's Glen should be singled out and treated differently from other developments that have been approved. And that's basically what's been done here. Barring any law, regulation, or code to the contrary, Isaac's Glen should be approved. There's no reason for it not to be. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Gentleman on the inside there, green and white shirt.
Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Deacon Terrence Neal with the Philadelphia Pentecostal Holiness Church, and I'm standing representing them, the pastors, Bishop Foster. I didn't realize that we would have to explain why we believe that council made a mistake. But after listening tonight, I would have to say it seems to me that they possibly didn't understand the legislation that you had presented to them. Nevertheless, to make it very quickly and briefly, because I was here early, I had to stand up and repeat the Lord's Prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance. The part of the scripture says, "Forgive us of our trespasses and forgive those who trespass against us." If we don't right a wrong, it's like asking God to forgive us of something that we're knowing that we're going to do. Quite honestly, I know church and I know church business, and God doesn't honor that. So most certainly, if the commission did make a mistake, it's only right for this council to make reprimands, make amends to that mistake. I don't know the Isaacs, and I don't know these lawyers, but most certainly, what's right is right, and what's wrong is wrong. The Philadelphia Pentecostal Holiness Church, we support the right.
We have your name again, please.
Deacon Contreras.
Deacon Terrence Neal.
Okay, sorry.
Terrence Neal.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Kramer, did you have your hand up?
Michael, why don't you move up so you're going to wear yourself out.
You're blending in back there, Mr. Podcast.
I have no objection to all these witnesses. Well, we haven't heard this one yet.
But
we assumed
that
it was...
You're about to hear it. My name is Dan Kramer, and I will tell you, your commissioners cannot read law. They don't have no idea about law. So why are they even on the commission? Every one of them ought to be slam dunked.
Are you running for the commission?
Yeah, I'll take the job because I think I could do a little better job than they do.
You're up a little late.
And furthermore, don't get me started. Because I tell you what, I got all night and all day tomorrow if you want to get going.
Do you have any reasons to get...
Yes, I do. One of the issues was the roads aren't big enough for farm machinery to come down the road. Crack a bull if I ever heard it spoken. Why? Just recently, I was coming down 13. Here was a monster of a truck coming right through southern part of Dover. And all that traffic. But yet, here we got a country road, a lot bigger than the town roads. And now, all of a sudden, it's not big enough for farm machinery. Man, I'll tell you what. If these people would ever get a life, they'd truly be dangerous. And I said, how did you ask? First of all, the original proposal that they wanted out there, you guys should have voted for that one.
I did.
I know you did. But we had a couple of hardheads in here.
Wait a minute. Now, Dale's
that should have voted for it, including you.
Dale's voted for everything. Now, come on now. That's not fair.
Good night.
I assume that all the previous speakers have cut your speech to almost a minute, maybe, Mr. Farkas?
Wishful thinking.
All right.
Are you with him?
Sign it. Well, you don't have to stick to your prepared text. You know that.
I for the record, it's Mike Parkowski. I'm a partner in the law firm of Parkowski, Girk, and Swayze. I'm here tonight on behalf of the Isaacs family. And... you know, Mr. Griffin, you're absolutely correct. Most of the comments that have been made tonight are things that I could have addressed and I don't intend to repeat. What I do want to focus on is, and I want to just say initially, that I was at the Planning Commission hearing and I heard probably the most thorough presentation made on point with the provisions in the code that deal with approval for the cluster development. It's probably one of the most thorough presentations I've ever heard in my whole career. Point-by-point detailed presentation of information to the commission. Tonight I've heard also Mr. Manning make a presentation which covered those very same points. And the focus of the whole commentary has been, if you follow the code, this is a project that should have been approved. And I really believe that the greatest criticism anybody can render to the commission and what it did was it was influenced by factors and policies which are not part of the code. And what I'd like to do in pointing out that the decision is unfair, was inequitable to the Isaacs family, is just focus on a few of those items that I think really deserve some attention. The level four issue. Level four is something the state concocted, not the county. It doesn't appear in the code anywhere. The state has attempted on numerous occasions to try to get legislation passed identifying or adopting level four for some purpose or another, and it hasn't happened. Your role as judges here tonight is to determine what the law is or was at the time that this application was made, not what somebody would like it to be, or not what kind of influence the state is trying to exert on county land use plans. So the level four issue doesn't make any sense, and apparently the Planning Commission agrees also, because out of the 26 approvals that have been made for cluster developments, they're in level four areas. So if there's threat or concern or some fear that the state's going to take some kind of retaliation, like take money away from you, transfer tax money or something like that, it hasn't been happening, and besides, that's a legislative function. It's not the administration that can make that kind of a decision. Highway traffic. This is a project I can remember walking out of council after the RPC project was rejected, feeling that, well, there's been a recommendation here that the Isaacs and the developer go back to the commission with a cluster proposal. The commercial component wasn't acceptable. There was an attempt to try to work things out here, and I commend you for trying to do that. I thought this is a no-brainer. You got the traffic impact study that's been approved. If you sit back and just from a common sense standpoint say, you know, what's the difference between a cluster and a cookie-cutter type of project, one which has a lot of open space and one which doesn't, I thought this shouldn't be too much of a problem. But then came the campaign against the project. And again, this is state policymakers trying to inject themselves into the process and dictate what should happen at the state level, and apparently they were successful. Highway traffic, if it was a factor at Isaac's Glen, you got to ask yourself, how in the world can anybody argue that there's some consistency in this world if it wasn't a factor with respect to Captain's Way and Hemingbird Meadows? There's 700 units there dumping onto 16. And I know from the limited amount of time I ride up and down the highways in Sussex County that every time I'm on 16, I see license plates from Maryland, District of Columbia, Virginia. It is an artery. It's a main artery for getting to the beach, and 30 isn't. To be able to make that comparison, say one's a problem, one isn't, suggests there's something wrong with the Planning Commission reasoning and its decision. The preservation argument. I'm probably in a better position than most people to comment on the details of the Ag Preservation Program. I drafted the legislation. I'm intimately involved in the program. It's the best program in the country. But I can tell you, no matter what anybody else tells you about it, it's a voluntary program, and it's the reason it's successful. And the farm community supports it, even those who don't participate in it, because the farmers in Delaware are pro-choice. If they want to develop their land, they have the right to do it as long as they comply with the code requirements. And if they choose not to, they have the ability to preserve it and use those types of programs, either open space or the programs that are involved, the Ag Preservation Program. So if there's some suggestion here that because somebody else did it, everybody should do it, that's never been part of the system. And if you want to find out, you know, from the horse's mouth what the view is on it, you have to talk to the foundation chairman, not some of the people who are in the planning element of the state. One of the comments I think that also was made is that, well, you know, this project is close to the Ponders Tract. I mean, that was one of the comments that showed up in the PLUS process. The Ponders Tract, as you may know, is a piece of property that the state, along with the Nature Conservancy, tied up, and they have a preservation easement on it. Well, lo and behold, Captain's Way. Where's it located? Not a mile away from the Ponders Tract. It's adjacent to it, but that's okay. There is, again, one of the inconsistencies and the double standard that has been applied by the Planning Commission that doesn't take into account there's no legitimate distinction involved. The other argument was that, well, character of the area. We have one piece of property, I think Mr. Hobby Isaac's property, adjacent to the Isaac's Glen project. That's in farm preservation. Well, you know, this is something that could be a problem if you have a development next to that area. But yet the intended use, one of the intended uses of that preservation property is for the spraying of treated sewage on that property. Now, there's something that really discourages growth in the region or in the area. Now, one of the other things that is out there that, you know, we keep hearing and thinking about, if you just look at the newspapers, you would think that Isaac's Glen is located on some part of the moon, you know, that isn't near anything. You know, I looked at that chart that you see up there, and there are six cluster development proposals within a radius of a mile of Isaac's Glen. There isn't another area in all of Sussex County that exists except one spot where there's eight. What I'm saying to you is that this is really an emerging, as Mr. Herhold has said, this is an emerging area for development. And if you want to understand where development goes where it makes sense to go, where the economics lead it. And the economics are leading people to this particular area, and the Planning Commission's responding by approving these things as clusters, except for this project. And what I'm saying to you is this has been unfair in the way that this project's been treated. It's been influenced by factors that don't have anything to do with the law or with the code, and that is the thing that we're asking you to rectify. You sit here in a quasi-judicial capacity. You have the ability to overview what goes on with the Planning Commission. That's your function. And the one thing I would like to urge you to do, I'd like you to exercise that judgment tonight, to listen to all these people who've said what they've said, to be influenced by what they've said, and to vote on the merits of this. This is not an issue that some court should decide and tell you what the law is or all the rest of it. Your responsibility in this whole process, otherwise this appeal process is a mockery, is to make the decision. And I would ask that you make that decision. I'd ask that you make it fairly. And I wish, and I ask that you unwind these inequities that have been rendered on the Isaacs family and recognize the frustration that these people have and other people in the farm community because of just the struggle that's going on statewide. If you want to change your code and make the rules different, that's fine. But at least apply the code the way it exists now. And if you do, then I think you have to find that the Planning Commission erred. And I thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Have we covered everybody? There, is somebody else getting up?
Oh, he's getting back down.
Jerry's up there. Okay, is there anyone here who wishes to speak in opposition to the application? I believe Mrs. Grandkey had put her hand up earlier. Would you like to be recognized?
Mabel Grandkey, and I'm here in the capacity of president of the Citizens Action Foundation, and we have consistently been with this project all along in terms of our concerns. And that's in terms of what the commission did in its decision. I would like to make 3 points. In the code, 115-19 describes very specifically the AR1 zone and its purpose. And the purpose, although it allows residential development, is to encourage and be supportive of agriculture. And so I think that the decision needs to be based on that. As well as in our adopted Sussex County land use plan, there is the low density area. And this project, as well as the others, falls into the low density area, which very specifically states, and this is what is neglected, is the connection of yes, residential development is permitted in the low-density area, but, and there's the but, it is supposed to support and encourage agriculture. And then I would like to take you back to the discussion with regard to the traffic impact study. And it is my memory, and you possibly would need to make sure of the record, but it is my memory that DLDOT very specifically said that this subdivision application had to have another traffic impact study, and whether that makes additional determinations with regard to the realignment of the roads or not, I do not know. But I do know that in the state planning report, and this is also what is important, that what the different agencies say, the Department of Transportation and DENREC, are very specific comments, and this was one by DelDOT. And I would hope that that could be confirmed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else here who wishes to speak in opposition to this application? Mr. Manning, would you, said you would revisit and tell us whether you thought you needed any rebuttal time?
If I can have 3 minutes.
How about two?
Let me try. Ms. Granke cited a phrase twice to you, encourage. You can have residential, but it's got to encourage and be supportive of agriculture. I have no idea what that means. And more importantly, those who read your code in order to figure out what they can do with real estate don't know what that means. I can argue just as aggressively that this is exactly encourages and is supportive of agriculture because it creates a population center so that you don't have to spread those 1,630 units out across the landscape and actually threaten agriculture in the area. But this is one of those standards that cannot be the basis for rejecting the plan. Finally, I'll just point out that, yes, DelDOT did say they want another traffic study. I have my own suspicions about why DelDOT said that. DelDOT was perfectly content with the first one. Now we hear they want another one. But the important thing is they said, yeah, when this project is approved, we'll have another traffic impact statement. We will do that when this project is approved. And that is not a basis on which the project should be turned down. Thank you very much. Unless you have any questions, that ends the presentation.
Thank you. That will conclude the appeal hearing in this matter. We have on our agenda that the opportunity for council to go into executive session to discuss pending litigation. Do we want to do that?
Yes, you should.
Yeah. Someone needs to make a motion.
I'll make a motion. Go ahead. I'll make a motion. We go into executive session to discuss pending
legislation.
Litigation. Motion by Mr. Duke, second by Mr. Phillips for Sussex County Council to go into executive session for pending
litigation.
Possible pending litigation. Questions? Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Dukes?
Yes.
The vote is yes. Sussex County Council is going into executive session for pending litigation.
For benefit of the public, after council finishes executive session, we'll come back in open session, but it's unlikely that a decision will be made on this matter tonight. So if you're thinking about staying to see if we do, I can almost guarantee you that no decision will be made tonight. So if that helps you make your decision,